The British government says the Russian airliner that crashed in the Sinai Peninsula may have been brought down by an explosive device. All flights from the popular holiday resort of Sharm el-Sheikh to the UK have been delayed while security checks are undertaken. Here's our UK correspondent, Dan Whitehead.
A spokesperson for No. 10 Downing Street said the delays to flights from Sharm el-Sheikh to the UK had been introduced in light of new information. The UK Prime Minister David Cameron is chairing an emergency COBRA meeting on Wednesday night to discuss the update. It's understood the flight delays are being brought in to allow a UK team of experts currently en route to Sharm to assess security arrangements at the airport. Downing Street stressed this was being taken as a precautionary measure. 224 people were killed when the Metrojet plane en route to St. Petersburg went down on Saturday. Dan Whitehead, London.
As part of the European Union's relocation program, 30 asylum seekers flew from Athens to Luxembourg Wednesday. This is the first group of asylum seekers moved from Greece, and while the relocation program is underway, the EU is still very far from reaching its relocation goals. Our Europe correspondent Kevin Ozebek has more.
The 30 asylum seekers moved from Greece to Luxembourg are made up of six Iraqi and Syrian families. Back in September, the European Union agreed to relocate 160,000 asylum seekers from Greece and Italy to other countries across Europe over the next 2 years. So far, only 116 asylum seekers have been relocated as part of this program. And still, refugees and migrants continue to flood in Europe. Last month alone, more than 218,000 people arrived in Greece. Kevin Ozebek, Brussels.
After a lengthy process, the U.S. State Department has given the green light for the sale of drone armaments to the Italian military. Italy has been asking the U.S. for weaponry to arm its two MQ-9 Reaper drones since 2012. Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
The $130 million sale includes over 100 Hellfire II missiles and 20 laser-guided bombs, among other munitions, according to a Reuters report. Italy is only the second country the United States has sold drone weaponry to after Britain. An unidentified Pentagon official said Italy qualified for the export deal because the American government sees it as a trusted partner and ally. While Congress can block the sale, it's thought unlikely down to the strict vetting process that has already taken place. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
For more of the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story or check out our website at featurestorynews.com. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Now, you did hear that on the news, didn't you? Tell me you heard that on the news. The United States will sell massive amounts of weaponry and drones to Italy because it qualifies as a trusted ally. Because, yeah, the only people the United States will sell weapons to are trusted allies. Holy shit, have you ever heard such lies in all your life? It's 4 minutes past the hour. I said it before, I'll say it again. You've been listening to the lies. It's now time for the truth.
It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program. It's your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. It is November the 4th, which is Wednesday. It is Wednesday's show. You're welcome to it. Coming up in the second hour, making his debut on the program, is the renowned journalist Christopher Bolland. Oh, I could tell you lots about Christopher's epic resume, but I won't. I'll tell you later. He's going to be talking about the glaring inconsistencies in the reporting of last weekend's Egyptian plane crash. Well, it was a Russian plane, but the MSM is saying Egyptian plane crash over the Sinai Peninsula. If the plane was shot down or blown up, who benefits? You heard on the news late this afternoon. The British government, with no evidence whatsoever, have declared that the plane was blown up. Yeah. Of course it was. So Christopher Bolland on that and much more. Maybe we'll talk about the history of false flag operations with Christopher in hour two. Coming up in the first hour, Michael Murphy, great friend of ours and the producer of the outstanding What in the World Are They Spraying films, joins me. He'll be chatting about the forthcoming UN Climate Change Conference, which takes place in Paris. In fact, if my memory serves me correctly, it's November 30th, I think it is anyway, around about then. He will be talking about why we are facing a carbon dictatorship. But equally as importantly, Michael is going to be talking about a new groundbreaking experiment which he hopes will prove the existence of chemtrails once and for all. And that experiment, by the way, involves a paraglider. Now, the paraglider might be joining us in the first hour as well. Michael is trying to get him hooked up there. He's in a different part of the world to Michael Murphy at this point in time. As usual, your opinion matters to me. That isn't a patronising thing. It isn't a cliche. It's not a throwaway line. It really does. So tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Big happy birthday to Anne Selly. How are you, Anne? And happy birthday. I noticed on social media that it was your birthday. So a big listener to the programme, regular listener, and regularly shares and tweets around the podcast and the videos. And she's contributed to the programme as well in the past. Happy birthday, Anne. Nice to, I'm sure you've had a good day. Right, what will we talk about then? Because we've got about 10, 12 minutes before Michael Murphy joins us. You heard in the news that the flight that crashed over the Sinai Peninsula last weekend, it's been claimed by the British government that it was an explosive device. Well, blow me down, eh? The Metrojet plane crashed last weekend, of course, 224 souls on board perished. That's no laughing matter at all, whatsoever, of course. It was revealed or announced later this afternoon on the BBC and other British mainstream news channels that flights from Egypt's Sharm el-Sheikh region to the UK have been delayed amid concerns that the Russian jet was brought down by this explosive device. What the British government is saying, really, is that they have intelligence that suggests to them that it was an explosive device. Intelligence is telling them that. In fact, there's a guy called Nigel, is it Inkhorst or Inkwell or Ink something or other? He's a former MI6 goon now. Don't mind this director bollocks they give you when they put his name on the screen. He's not a director or a former director, he's a goon. He's a professional liar. He says, well, intelligence, you know, is telling us, you know, that quite probably, in all likelihood, it was an explosive device. Do you have any evidence? No, see, they don't say that on Sky News. No. Any evidence? Well, intelligence, we can't tell you because, of course, we tell you we might be compromising missions ongoing and we might be revealing sources and we might be putting people in harm's way. You know the way it is, old chap. We just tell you a pack of lies and you report them. So that's the story. That's the story, yeah. We have intelligence. Nobody, remember, what's left of that wreck that hasn't been taken away to be assembled in the big factory, in the big warehouse. If you've ever seen Air Crash Investigation, they actually put this bloody thing together again. It's a painstaking process. It takes months. Yes, they have the flight data recorders, but it takes a long time to determine beyond any doubt what caused the crash, but not if you're the maniacal liars who currently inhabit our governments, or the offices of our governments anyway. More on that with Christopher Bolland in hour two. You will know by now, and this is of huge interest to our American listeners as well, the internet activity of everyone in Britain will have to be stored for a year by service providers under new surveillance law plans. Plans now. Plans not come into effect yet. Police and intelligence officers will be able to see the names of sites that people have visited without a warrant, Home Secretary Theresa May said. I'm in serious trouble. My internet history is all the same. Filthyvideos.com, pervyvideos, no. This is horrifying, it isn't funny. They said there would be new safeguards over MI5, MI6 and the police spying on the full content of people's web use, but they're not telling the truth, of course. Civil liberties groups all across the country and outside of the country have said this is an absolute outrage. This is Theresa May today telling everybody in the House of Parliament that the threat is clear. Have a listen to this.
We live in a digital age. Technology is having a profound effect on society. Computers are central to our everyday lives. Big data is reshaping the way we live and work. The internet has brought us tremendous opportunities to prosper and interact with others. But a digital society also presents us with challenges. The same benefits enjoyed by us all are being exploited by serious and organised criminals, online fraudsters and terrorists. The threat is clear. In the past 12 months alone, six significant terrorist plots have been disrupted here in the UK.
Prove it to us.
As well as a number of further plots overseas.
Prove it to us. Where are the arrests?
The frequency and cost of cyber attacks is increasing, with 90% of large organisations suffering an information security breach last year.
You see, it's lies, people. This is something that is lamented on this programme time and time again. We have allowed develop a paradigm in which an elected official supposedly working for the electorate, the people whom elect them to office, can tell you that we filed six terrible plots that would have caused widespread devastation in the country. We did that and narrowly avoided lots of you dying and being wounded and being basically terrorised. We did that. We prevented you from that. Where's the evidence? Can't tell you. You know? We'll be picking this up more in the coming days and weeks. I've spoken about it already on the programme. We've gotten into it in the television programme. This is a proposal. It would have to be passed by Parliament and it would, of course, have to be rubber stamped in the House of Lords. More on it maybe tomorrow, maybe next week. But they want basically the police not to have a warrant to go and look at what you've been doing on the internet. Wow. Amazing. And people, as I am talking to you now, dear listener, at 12 minutes past the hour on Wednesday, the 4th of November, people will be switching over to the football. Switching over to EastEnders or whatever the bloody hell is on now in England. No idea. The implications are staggering, but there'll be little condemnation of this on the mainstream media tonight. I'm telling you now. Something which disturbed me today, but again, I shouldn't be surprised by it. In fact, I'm not really surprised by it. Jeremy Corbyn, the recently elected leader of the Labour Party, has come out and criticised Gerald Kaufman of Manchester. And criticised him and accused him of making unacceptable claims that money from Jewish donors had influenced the Conservatives' policy on Israel. Now, Kaufman is Jewish, and he said Jewish money, Jewish donations to the Conservative Party has led to a pro-Israel bias in the Conservatives. What's wrong with that? Corbyn is a long-standing critic of Israel, but he's the leader of the Labour Party now, you know. And he said that the Labour whips had been ordered to speak to Kaufman about those comments. They were reported last week. And, of course, Jewish groups in Britain, including Simon Johnson, the chief executive of the Jewish Leadership Council, came out and basically said that it was anti-Semitism. Everything is anti-Semitism. Kaufman says, a lot of Jewish money being spent, lobbying being spent, time and money being spent by Jewish groups to influence politics and to influence policy here in Britain. That shouldn't be the case. We have to look at that. You're a racist! You're a fucking racist. No, he isn't. He's telling the truth. And I'm going to play you a little snippet, just a little snippet, of a documentary which was made by Peter O'Born for Channel 4 back in 2009. Now, anybody who's listening to this in Britain will be aware of the Dispatches programme. It's a documentary series. I say series, it runs constantly on Channel 4. O'Born made this fantastic film in 2009 called Inside Britain's Israel Lobby. Now, because of the length of it and because of time constraints, I wasn't in a position today to download this in a way that I could extract a couple of clips from it. But I have extracted one clip that I want you to hear, and then I'm going to tweet out the link to the documentary. In it, talking about the extent of the influence of the Israeli lobby in Britain, this is in 2009 now, a year before the Tories came to power, O'Byrne is talking here to Michael Ancram. Now, he's a former Shadow Foreign Secretary and a Conservative MP. Listen to Ancram talking to Oborne. You'll hear Oborne first and you'll hear his question. This is really, really important. Listen.
Sponsors.
Do you think there's a connection between the, on the whole, surprisingly soft line the Conservative Party takes towards the foreign policy of the Israeli state and the pattern of donors to the Conservative Party?
Well, I think in the past there has been a connection between the people who gave money, but who we met and we talked to, who were passionately concerned about Israel, and obviously we listened to their concerns. Mm-hmm. And in some ways we reflected them.
Oh, did you hear that? We listened to their concerns and in some ways we reflected them. We reflected them. Wow. A year before becoming Prime Minister, David Cameron gave the keynote speech at an evening of dining and whining and dining of the Conservative Friends of Israel. And in that speech, Cameron said, and I quote, "If I'm elected Prime Minister next year, Israel will never have to worry. It has a friend forever in me and the Conservative Party." Now listen to what Oborne says here. Now Oborne is a senior journalist. He's written for The Telegraph for years. I suppose he'd be considered to be a right-wing writer. Have a listen to this.
But they don't like to talk about it, at least not in public. One Tory MP privately taunted me to make a film about the pro-Israeli lobby. He said, "You don't have the guts of the biggest lobby in Westminster, and it's a big story." But when I went back to this courageous individual and say, "Hey, come on television and tell us about it," he ran a mile. One Tory front bencher was so paranoid that he insisted I didn't just turn off my mobile phone, but take out the battery in case we were being bugged.
I want you to go to YouTube, not now, because you're going to be listening to Michael Murphy shortly, and look for Dispatches Inside Britain's Israel Lobby 2009. Jeremy Corbyn owes an unequivocal apology to Gerald Kaufman for saying that there was anything wrong with what Kaufman said about the Conservative Party and its bias towards the state of Israel. It's outrageous. Outrageous that Corbyn would say such remarks are damaging to community relations. It's outrageous, and I'm quoting Corbyn here now, that Corbyn said, "I have always implacably opposed all forms of racism, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia and will continue to do so." Thereby the implication being that what Kaufman said was anti-Semitic. You see? Well, I've nothing else to say on that, really. You make your own minds up on it. You know, you make your own minds up. It's 18 minutes past the hour. I was going to talk to you about a story on davidicke.com/headlines. Get on to davidicke.com/headlines. Always stay with it. Make it your homepage. An incredible story on there about a 6-year-old Catholic school student who's been suspended for 3 days for pretending to shoot another student with a bow and arrow. Pretending with an imaginary bow and arrow. It's very interesting, this story, in light of our chat last night with Wendy Bradshaw and with Sian Bloor about what school policies, which are not written by teachers but are written by bureaucrats and written by corporations, what they are doing to children. Imagine suspending a child for 3 days. And according to the MSNBC story on it, which I can't play for you now because we have to move on, this isn't an isolated incident. Right across the United States of America, young children, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of age, are being suspended for nothing. Another child was suspended for having a staring contest with a girl. A staring contest, which we used to do all the time in school. Stare at one another until somebody laughs. Suspended for 3 days. No coincidence here. As David Icke said time and time and time and time and time again, connect the dots. None of these stories in the MSM are unrelated. It's a fact. Back in a minute.
NeonNettle.com, a new voice in alternative media. For unfiltered news at your fingertips, visit NeonNettle.com, the UK's number one alternative news site. In association with The Richie Allen Show, NeonNettle.com.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness
and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now. Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Imagine suspending a child for pretending to play with an imaginary bow and arrow. Imagine that. Wow. 20 minutes past the hour, you're with The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. My name is Richie Allen. You're welcome to the programme. Michael Murphy is up with me in about 3 minutes' time. Minutes past the hour, you too, Angel of Harlem on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Back in the day, before the corruption, before you start abusing me, some parts of my past I can't let go of, and that seems to be one of them. Right, my first guest needs no introduction whatsoever to you, because you know exactly who he is. He is the man responsible for the outstanding series of films about geoengineering and chemtrail spraying, the first of which was the groundbreaking What in the World Are They Spraying? He's a top man. He's in a lot of demand. We're going to be talking about, amongst other things, the forthcoming imminent UN climate change conference in Paris, what that means for all of us. Carbon dictatorship we'll talk about, but also about a groundbreaking experiment which my first guest hopes will prove is the existence of chemtrails to the doubters, if there are any doubters, once and for all. Let's welcome back to the programme our great friend Michael Murphy. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Richie. How are you? Thank you.
Absolutely. We're on hold there. You see, this is incredible, this. When we were in, we might be back.
Richie,
we might be.
I got bumped off with the phone call, but I'm back. Thank you for coming.
Ah, right. It was a phone call coming. I was just about to say it was something sinister, but it wasn't. It was only a phone call. Hey, Mike, it's great to have you back on. Where are you based these days? Last time I spoke with you, you were in Central Time somewhere, or you were on Eastern Time, but I think you're on the West Coast now. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm back in Los Angeles, and I came back to do an aerosol collection project. So going up into the trails, taking collections of the aerosols that we see in our sky on a regular basis. So we're developing that project and actually expanding it. So I was actually only planning on coming out for a couple of weeks. But I've decided to stay so that we can complete this important project and move closer to getting geoengineering chemtrails stopped.
Fantastic, Michael. There was a lot of interest, understandably, when various independent news websites and channels posted over the last couple of days, having learned from you, you're going to do this experiment, and we're going to spend some time talking about it shortly because it's really exciting. But first of all, let's talk about the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris, which might be the, I don't know, it might be the 25th or the 28th or the 29th such conference. But politicians tell us that these are very important conferences because we've got to get some sort of consensus on reducing emissions and all this sort of stuff. Now they're talking scary language about enshrining things in law and punishing countries and punishing the citizens of those countries if they don't, you know, get into line and reduce their emissions. You've described it as a carbon dictatorship. Tell us more.
That's right. And I was in Paris, France this summer for the Our Common Future Under Climate Change. We called it, activists called it, Our Communist Future Under Climate Change. And they really spoke about their goals and agendas in reducing carbon dioxide. Now, I want to point out geoengineering programs, which have been ongoing for over 50 years, they're literally designed to change the temperature of our planet. They also manipulate our weather. And they are creating most, if not all, of the changes that we've seen in our climate. So it's very interesting, but very important to note that these programs are not in any of the climate models. And therefore, it makes it impossible to determine whether the planet's warming or cooling. Bottom line is this. Those models are flawed. They're fraudulent. You cannot move forward with a carbon dictatorship, with the transfer of potentially trillions of dollars of wealth into the hands of a few at the expense of every living thing on the planet, and circumvent constitutions and the sovereignty of nations around the world. That is what they were moving forward with. This is the new world order. It is the most oppressive government that is planned. It's all based on this concept of carbon creating all these problems that we're seeing. It's fraudulent, it's flawed, and if we don't do something, if we don't demand that they're stopped, we will see, again, the most oppressive government micromanaging our lives. It will circumvent the laws that we have in our countries and allow this unelected body, where we don't have any representation, to micromanage and mandate our lives. And we're talking a complete carbon dictatorship, not only in what we drive, when we drive, when we go to work, how we go to work, but what appliances we use in our home. And now we have these smart meters, which are on the outside of our homes, and they can measure when we're home, what appliances we're using. They're going to mandate what appliances we purchase, what products we buy. This is complete corporate takeover of the planet. It's very, very concerning, Richie.
Michael, I tell you what, I couldn't have summed that up better. And what you said there, I'm thinking of Philippe Verdier, the French weatherman, whom you'll know all about, who has written a book, which in the book, and this is a personal thing, this guy's been on French national television for years giving the weather. And he's written this book, and in the book he says that climate change is nonsense. So he's being fired from his job. There's an arbitration hearing coming up. And if you ever needed proof, Mike, that they will do anything and everything to suppress any sort of logical and any real academic debate on this subject. Well, there you have it right there. Weatherman for national television, writes a book in his spare time, disagreement climate change, you're fired, mate. Incredible, Michael.
You better believe. And Stephen Schneider actually addressed, he was a presidential advisor all the way from Nixon to Obama, died a mysterious death. But he spoke, and he was actually part of ClimateGate, about attacking scientists and journalists who would oppose this idea that CO2 is creating global warming. So that was, it's been a planned agenda, and it's been written on paper in terms of how they are attempting to keep this out of the scientific community and out of the media. And again, this agenda is a transfer of the most monetary and political power that we have had in the history of our planet. And it's all based on fraud. And we can prove that. And that's why we're doing the test, which hopefully we'll talk about.
Oh, yeah. Michael, yeah. I can't wait. We're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. But I just want to say something else that's very important. While Michael is on the line to us now from Los Angeles, this week and even today, there were articles in various tabloid newspapers saying that in a few years' time, our grid our power grids around the world might be threatened by solar activity. Now, this was a story that the BBC ran with on Monday. It was run, I know the Express ran with it, I know the Mail did. It's been in the newspapers again today. I can't remember which one. Michael, this is unbelievable. On the one hand, they want you and I, you know, we're reasonably intelligent people. You know, we're not geniuses. Well, maybe you are. I'm certainly no genius, but we're not stupid, right? So they tell us the sun and activity on the sun can cause a big, you know, can wipe out your grid. But the sun has got nothing to do with driving climate change on the planet. Michael, you couldn't make that up. I mean, who comes out with this stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And there are many factors in climate change. It's very complex. The one thing that we can absolutely prove besides the sun, again, is geoengineering, and that these programs are going on. They're literally designed to do this. So, you know, it's interesting because in Paris, we had an opportunity to speak with many of the scientists, some of the world's top scientists that were there. And we spoke about the climate models. And we didn't specifically with all of them talk about geoengineering, but we discussed the sun and even particulate, even aerosols that were in the sky, which they believed were from volcanoes. We know some of those, if not most, are from geoengineering programs. And we said, due to the fact that these climate drivers are missing from these models, what does that make the models? And the consensus among scientists who we discussed this with was, well, the models are not accurate. And imagine, if they're not accurate, how do you move forward with taxing people, with destroying sovereignty of nations, with stealing against people's will, their money, their sovereignty, their freedoms? And that's what's going on. And people have to take a stand. This is it. And Richie, this is the first binding agreement. So when I've discussed this with a lot of the, even some of the climate scientists who are opposing this global warming agenda, this climate change agenda, they've been doubtful that this will move forward. And because of the past, we had the Kyoto Treaty, for example, which was a failure. A lot of countries agreed to it. However, they did not fulfill their obligations. This is the first binding agreement. And I think you wrapped it up in the first couple of sentences that you said what they're planning on doing with this legally binding agreement. Again, it's going to create a whole new government, ran by the IPCC and the UN. But what it will do, they are offering to underdeveloped nations like and countries in Africa incentives to sign on to this. So they will be taking our tax money and giving it to people over there. But they're going to also have disincentives for countries like us. So we have to abide by these. And if we don't abide by them, they're literally going to fine us. They're going to put mandates on us. This is financial warfare.
It's terrorism, Michael.
It absolutely
is. It's a form of terrorism, yeah.
Yeah. War is about money and power. It is about a transfer of money and power. This is war. And we are the subjects of this war. And you know what, Richie? Only 8% of the population is aware of geoengineering programs. So that means 92% of our populace is likely to believe, because they see that our climate's changing, that it's due to CO2. And that's why people are buying into this. So our message is very strong. We demand that all climate agreements, talks, mandates are immediately rescinded, that all geoengineering programs are immediately stopped, period. And then we'll see what the planet's doing. I think we will find that there is no warming. Follow the money. However, again, you can't determine it until geoengineering is stopped. And that's what I think our leverage is in terms of addressing this in a legal capacity. And bottom line, there are damages right now. California moved forward with cap and trade based on these bogus and faulty models. There are millions of dollars of damages in California alone. After this climate agreement, we're talking about trillions of dollars of damages. When it comes to light, which it will, not only in the legal system, but to people around the world, there will be a revolution. And we will take back our freedom and sovereignty. But it's all rooted in the chemtrail geoengineering issue, because we can prove that these are a factor in our changing climate.
Brilliant. Ellen emailed us to say, great to have Michael Murphy on the program. I've seen the films. I love them. Thanks, Ellen. Ellen said, don't forget, what the reason why they're bringing the third world countries into this is because they don't want those countries to develop. Because the Agenda 21 agenda is to wipe so many people off the face of the earth. They don't want these countries developing. I think Emma's got a very good point there. I want to mention a couple of other comments. Mike was on to say, the radiation from the smart meters is disrupting people's sleep as well. No doubt about that. We've had that on the programme. Scott was on to ask on Twitter, can you ask Mike about the fibres that have been falling from the sky in Ohio? Does he think chemtrails are the cause? Because I do. Before we, because we will now move on now in a second to the test and the experiment that Michael is going to do. What about these fibres, Michael, in Ohio? What do you think?
We found fibres all around the US, including in March when the snow melted in Canada. When I was in Chicago, we took samples off of our lawns. There was this webbing effect. Sure enough, that webbing came off very high with the primary ingredients of geoengineering programs, aluminum, barium, and strontium, amongst other things, which appear to be, according to Dr. Marvin Herndon, appear to be remnants of coal fly ash. So we think that that's at least some of the components of the geoengineering programs. But yeah, and anybody that finds webs like this, I would encourage them to get them tested. We can speculate all that we want, but if we want to stop these programs, we have to get past the speculation. We have to get in to testing, because testing provides court admissible evidence. Not that I have 100% faith in our court system. However, if we test around the world and we get enough evidence, we will see revolution in that court system could work for us.
This is so brilliant. Yeah, this is great news, Michael. So now we're neatly around now to the to what I mentioned in the introduction. And we were hoping tonight to hear from a paraglider friend of yours. We might get him on another time. That's not a problem at all. It's good to just have you on. But tell us about this experiment, which is groundbreaking and original and new, which will once and for all prove the existence of this. Tell us.
Exactly. Well, we started the aerosol collection project. We took airplanes up into the sky with sampling equipment and a team, including a film crew. We were successful in getting a couple of baseline tests, but we still need some more agility in terms of jets to get up into the trails to test long enough and be able to get up there and have the time to get up there. Obviously, a jet's a lot quicker. So a single-engine plane is not going to be effective for what we're doing. So we have to expand the programs. But while we're doing that, we also got in contact with a couple of paragliders, and these paragliders stated that it would be a very effective test if they took paragliders, which essentially it's a little engine in a parachute. So they're going to be going up into the trails testing. They own an atmospheric testing company, so we will get accurate tests, and we will be able to definitively prove that there is contamination in that geoengineering is happening, assuming that we get the tests that we're expecting. So this is a very important test for a couple of reasons. Number one, the exciting thing about this is there's a lot of national attention. We had a national press release yesterday. A paraglider has never gone above 26,000 feet. They just got FAA approval. Why the FAA approved them, we have no idea.
Wow.
To get up to 32,000 feet. This is a world record. So Guinness and other companies who are interested in these types of radical experiments and radical pilot movements are very interested in this. And these guys are going up into negative 50 degree weather and 100 mile an hour winds. They're going up to do this, so it's very dangerous. There's about a 10 or 15% chance that they might not make it down. So it's very risky. However, it creates a lot of attention on the issue, and it gives us a lot of
It certainly does, Mike. It's interesting you say that the FAA is on board, because you kind of answered several questions on Twitter, all asking, do you think you're going to be unmolested, as it were? Do you think you'll be allowed to carry out these experiments without any opposition, Mike? Because there are people who don't want you up there, or those stunt men, those wonderful people who are going to do it.
Richie, the one thing after being in this movement for several years and having films, what and why in the world are they spraying? No, we're not naive. There's obviously quite a bit of opposition. So we're expecting the first couple of trails to be inert. We're expecting them just to spray, you know, water up in those areas. However, what our goal is to do is to expand this program into all areas around the United States and around the world. And in doing so, they will not be able to, for example, oppose us in that capacity if we have 10 programs, let's say, going off in a year. So the FAA did give them approval. It was actually somebody who worked in the FAA who knows one of the paragliders who doesn't believe it's happening. So he granted the approval. So, yeah, it was addressed by a government agency. We will see what happens. We have 1 year to complete the project, and it appears that they're in the process of building a new motor to get up that high and designing a gasoline that will get them up that high as well. So it's going to take a couple of months, but from that point, we have 1 year, and they can get up to a trail in about 8 to 11 minutes. So all they have to do is call the control tower, and I think they get clearance in that area. So it's going to be very challenging for any opposition to spray anything inert. But again, we're definitely going to test many times. We expect some opposition, and that's just one of the factors that we have to consider.
Brilliant stuff. Loads of tweets on this. I'll read out a few more now. Wayne was on to say, this is massive. Some might call it the end game, really. If we don't stop the 2030 agenda, then the rest will come easy for the New World Order, he says. Simon was on to say, can the stunt men who are going up, the experts, can they also tell us if the Earth is indeed flat at that height? A lot of this in the internet in the last 6 or 8 months, I've seen a lot of people talking about this flat Earth theory, which I'm not going to go into now. I don't buy it at all, to be honest, but I'm not going to have a go at anybody. You know, people are entitled to believe what they want to believe, but I don't see it. I've not seen any evidence anyway. Andrea said something interesting on Twitter a few minutes ago. She said her cousin was married to a pilot, and she named him. She said his name was Jupp. Andre is German. So presumably her cousin and her cousin's husband were German as well. And that he was told, he was asked since the 1980s to flick that switch in parentheses, in inverted commas, when at certain altitudes. And apparently he's saying this. And that brings us, Michael, to pilots who have suspected this. Now, we know that there are pilots, and we're not saying that these things are on commercial planes, that the commercial planes have been modified to put out these trails. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. We're not saying that for definite. But we do know that commercial pilots have spoken off the record and said that, you know, they're very suspicious about what they've seen going on. We know this to be true, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. There are pilot scientists now and a number of individuals coming forward, even some secret whistleblowers who have spoken about their involvement with the programs. Remarkably, some of the things that they predicted in terms of different clouds and aerosol patterns for 2015 actually came true. We're seeing different patterns in the sky, those of us who are looking at this. So, issue, when we released What in the World Are They Spraying, Richie? Nobody believed this. And I think you were quite a bit skeptical, which is very healthy. But
I think when we first spoke, Mike, I think our first conversation was back in 2009, I think. And I think, I would have been skeptical. I mean, I hope I was polite to you. I think I was polite. But at the time, I was. Yeah, I thought, well, yeah, how are they doing it, you know?
You're always a gentleman. And you had an open mind. And here we are 5 years later, millions of people around the world now taking action. So we're very interested in moving forward with the information that we're going to get once we get positive test results. Then we have the ability to bring this into a court or into many courts around the world, prove conclusively that geoengineering is changing our temperature, changing our weather patterns, and it's not listed, not even named in these climate models. And because of that, then we can seek to recoup some of the monetary and other damages that people have been and will experience due to this climate agreement and, of course, the massive contamination issues. We can go 1,000 different directions. We have rain tests from around the world, hundreds of rain tests. They're coming in very high amounts of the primary ingredients of geoengineering programs, but nobody's gone up and specifically tested a trail. Now, what we also have outside of Hawaii, we have what I call sea level disbursements, where points of origin for massive amounts of aerosols, not trails, come from one source point. We believe that they're creating clouds from boats. We've seen it not only on satellite, but also visually. And that's where a lot of the aerosols, we believe, are generated. So we're going to, when we see this on satellite, we're going to have a team in Maui. Once we get the necessary resources, we're going to fly out there, fly through the plume that they're putting up, obviously take a sample of that, get photographic evidence, and then boom, again, we peel one more layer of the onion moving closer to getting these programs stopped.
Couple of quick questions. We've got about 5-6 minutes left. A couple of quick questions for you. Peter was on to ask, why is a paraglider, why not a small private jet? And I know you've answered that, but you might want to answer that again. And then I have a question about patents, which is interesting. Go ahead on the paraglider.
You got it. Why not a small private jet? Right now, we estimate it would cost about $7,000 per flight. A
lot of money.
I don't have that money right now. So paragliders had approached me. So we have to work with what we have. Working on a funding program so that we can get money for a jet that will give us a lot of versatility. And we want to expand this program. So that's a great question and very important. You can go to unconventionalgray.com. That's the website for my next film where all of this is going to be included in Unconventional Shade of Gray. Again, unconventionalgray.com. Help support my past projects. Why in the World Are They Spraying.com. Order a DVD, make as many copies, hand out for free. Time is critical right now. But again, every bit of support that you put towards the film will give us the necessary resources to fulfill what we need to do. It's at a critical time, and we're hoping to get a court injunction before the 5-year plan implementation plan for this the COP20, the Paris Climate Agreement.
Great stuff, Mike. So, yeah, Ellen. Well, in fact, or is it Helen? Has been on to ask about patents. We've touched on this in previous programs. There are a number of patents that have been taken out on the technology needed to do this by some pretty massive corporations, which again is is a big kind of a giveaway. Asks Helen, Michael, talk about that, patents.
Yes, well, the most notable patent is the Hughes aircraft patent, which was actually designed to put aluminum, barium, other primary ingredients of geoengineering dispersing out of geoengineering programs. There are about 92, if not more, patents now designed specifically their devices to spray these substances out of airplanes and other areas. You can find those on our new website that I built with G. Edward Griffin and a couple of incredible supporters and volunteer webmasters working collectively with the Global March Against Geoengineering. But go to coalitionagainstgeoengineering.org. You can see what we're doing, and it's a call to action page right now. And for the next couple of years, we're really going to focus on people taking the information that we have and moving forward both legally and politically and bottom line. Information is very important. However, if we only focus on information and exchanging information, the opposition is laughing.
Absolutely right, Michael. Action is needed now. It's time for action. Yeah,
it's an emergency. Yeah, action is definitely needed.
Mike, it was terrific speaking to you again. It's been about 5-6 months since we last had you on. Do us a favour. We love what you do, and we'll never stop telling people about it. So the minute you've got anything to report at all, as usual, you've got an open door to the programme. Just tell us where and when, and we'll get you on. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Wonderful. A pleasure as well. And thank you for everything that you're doing and David's doing. Really have a lot of respect for both of you. And you're bringing forth critical information and critical calls to action at a very critical time.
Thanks, my friend. I'll send you the links to this later on and you might post them. Thanks, Michael.
Wonderful. Thank you very
Marvelous.
Much.
Bye for now. The terrific Michael Murphy on the line to us there from Los Angeles. It is time for action, not just on that issue, but on many issues. I'm going to scroll way back because a lot of tweets came in when I was ranting about Jeremy Corbyn and when I was talking about that dreadful story. Shall I play that news insert? Will I play that news insert? I have it here. This is the story of the 6-year-old suspended from school for using an imaginary bow and arrow. Not even a little toy one, an imaginary one, and making the noises. Do you want to hear the story? Oh, this is on, amazing that that story was out today after speaking to Sian Bloor and Wendy Bradshaw last night. But have a listen to this first grader serving a 3-day suspension. I'm going to play you most of the news clip. Have a listen.
A first grade student is now serving a 3-day suspension for pretending to shoot another student at recess with a pretend bow and arrow. WLWT News Source Emily Wood is live for us tonight at our Lady of Lourdes Catholic School in Westwood with reaction from the boy's parents tonight. Emily.
Cherie, the parents of the first graders say they simply do not understand the punishment. They say the principal made a bad decision, and they want to prevent any student from going through the same thing. According to the boy's parents, their 6-year-old son was playing Power Rangers at recess last Thursday when he pretended to shoot someone with a bow and arrow.
He says, yes, I was shooting at them like I had my bow and arrow, just drawing it and making a sound effect, choo-choo-choo.
Matthew and Martha Mealy say the principal suspended their son for the next 3 days. Friday, the principal sent a letter home to parents stating, I have no tolerance for any real, pretend, or imitated violence. The punishment is an out-of-school suspension.
I can't stop him from having an imagination, and I'm not going to stop him from having an imagination. Children are supposed to pretend.
The Mealys say they spoke with the principal in person on Friday, but he would not change his decision. They also questioned the length of the suspension, saying it is unreasonable.
I would imagine a 3-day suspension would be an act of physical violence towards another person, a threat of real physical violence towards another person, not imagined.
Page 18 of the Archdiocese Educational Policy Manual states, in cases where a student is suspended, these procedures must be followed. Written notification is to be sent to the parents and student indicating the reason for suspension.
I'll leave it at that, will I? I mean, there's no need to play any more of that. Number of you on Twitter expressing incredulity. There's a word, incredulity, 5 syllables. You know, you won't hear another 5-syllable word on this program, I'm telling you. Not for a while anyway. Wow. Before I read out comments on that and other things, in the interest of fairness and balance, my Twitter chum, David Cole. How you doing, David? David does think that we are contributing to climate change. And he says, yes, I am imagining the warmth in November and the butterflies. It's me that's mad, says David, rather sarcastically, dripping with sarcasm there. But he's entitled to his opinion. I'm not going to do my usual rant at this point when I point out that historical evidence shows that we've had much, much warmer periods than this, when grapes were grown in Yorkshire. Oh yeah, and that's just one tiny example. Now, when grapes were grown in Yorkshire, pre the Middle Ages, there was no industrial, the power of English has deserted me. We weren't behaving the way we do now. There weren't mass factories all over the world. The Industrial Revolution hadn't happened. Massive emissions from factories and from homes didn't exist. But yet, at that time, and in fact, at that time, there was less carbon in the atmosphere than there is now. And this is a fact. This isn't conjecture. So, David, look, you are entitled to your opinion. And I've just read it out because that's what I will do. I'll read out all opinions, all of them, regardless. Anne Selly, whose birthday it is today, lives within a quarter of a mile of GCHQ and never sees any trails here, she says. Mummy Moonshine is the best Twitter name I've seen for a long time. Do you think Simon Parks is right about chemtrails in terms of 90% of it has stopped? I didn't get to ask that to Michael Murphy. I'm guessing Michael would say it hasn't stopped. Mummy Moonshine. Lots of comments about Jeremy Corbyn. A lot of disappointment being expressed with Corbyn for his criticism of Gerald Kaufman's comments about the Israeli lobby and its influence on this Conservative government. Thanks for those comments. I want to say hi to Joanne. How you doing, Joanne Clayton? To Mike. And everybody else who tweeted in. Nafisa. To Scott. There's so many tweets there. If you want to see what people are saying, it's Richie Allen Show, all one word, and then simply press enter and you'll see all the tweets. My good friend Martin Oak says, I haven't voted for 30 years. Corbyn looked like the real thing. However, the system now controls him. The aforementioned Joanne, if a school suspends a child, do they get fined for not allowing the child to go to school like the parents would? That's a good question. On Jeremy Corbyn, Jack Be Quick on Twitter says, anti-Semitism, any opinion not wholly supportive of Israel? Spot on. No arguing with that. And scrolling down, lots of tweets and retweets of some of the things that have been said a little bit earlier on. It's 5:30 to the top of the hour. You are with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It's a nice time to mention, or a nice opportunity to mention, I should say, that David is, of course, back doing speaking engagements on a pretty big scale beginning June the 18th next year at the Empire Theatre in Shepherd's Bush in London. Now go to davidike.com immediately to find out all the information. He's going to be in Australia, he's going to be in the States, he's going to be in Europe, he's going to be in Germany, and in 2017 he's going to be in this great city of Manchester. And regardless of whether or not the future Mrs. Allen and I have moved on, if we've moved, we will be back in the city to see David here, no doubt about that. So check out davidike.com for all the information there. And of course, davidike.com/headlines/headlines, make it your homepage. Terrific analysis and insight there into the big stories in the independent media and in the mainstream media as well. Joe was on to say, for feck's sake, kids have pretended to fight since the dawn of time. Why is it suddenly criminal now? It's bullshit, says Joe. Thank you very much, Joe. Kirsten was on to say, there was no industrial crap. And presumably that's in agreement with my comment, my assertion that way back when, as the temperatures in Britain were far warmer than they are now, there wasn't any industrial activity, basically. There you go. All I had to say was activity. There you go. David was back on to say, it's the speed of the increase of use. The planet has never warmed so quickly within one person's lifetime or half a lifetime, says David. Again, David, that's not strictly true. Although you would probably point to an academic who says it is. I can point to a half a dozen academics who say it isn't true. Bada bing, bada boom, what are you going to do? We'll agree to disagree, is what we'll do. That's what we'll do. Scott was on to say, give Jeremy Corbyn a year and he will be, and that's just disappeared off my screen, give him a year and he will be kissing the Queen's arse. Another sellout, says Scott. And that's where we leave it for this hour. Coming up in hour two, Christopher Bolan joins me. Don't miss him. It's his debut on this programme. He's a terrific journalist, very well known. Amongst other things, he will be talking about the British government's announcement today that they have intelligence which suggests the Egyptian crash, the Russian Metrojet plane which crashed over Sinai on Saturday, was brought down by an explosive device. Christopher Bolan will have lots to say on that. I have no doubt at all. No doubt at all. That was me banging the microphone, by the way. It's amateur night at the Richie Allen Show. This is Paul Simon taking us to news. I'll be back with you in about 7 minutes' time with Christopher Bolan. Don't go anywhere.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger. Dogs in the moonlight. Far away my well-lit door. Mr. Beer, belly, beer, belly. Get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone?
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The British government says the Russian airliner that crashed in the Sinai Peninsula may have been brought down by an explosive device. All flights from the popular holiday resort of Sharm el-Sheikh to the UK have been delayed while security checks are undertaken. Here's our UK correspondent, Dan Whitehead.
A spokesperson for No. 10 Downing Street said the delays to flights from Sharm el-Sheikh to the UK had been introduced in light of new information. The UK Prime Minister David Cameron is chairing an emergency COBRA meeting on Wednesday night to discuss the update. It's understood the flight delays are being brought in to allow a UK team of experts currently en route to Sharm to assess security arrangements at the airport. Downing Street stressed this was being taken as a precautionary measure. 224 people were killed when the Metrojet plane en route to St. Petersburg went down on Saturday. Dan Whitehead, London.
As part of the European Union's relocation program, 30 asylum seekers flew from Athens to Luxembourg Wednesday. This is the first group of asylum seekers moved from Greece, and while the relocation program is underway, the EU is still very far from reaching its relocation goals. Our Europe correspondent Kevin Ozebek has more.
The 30 asylum seekers moved from Greece to Luxembourg are made up of 6 Iraqi and Syrian families. Back in September, the European Union agreed to relocate 160,000 asylum seekers from Greece and Italy to other countries across Europe over the next 2 years. So far, only 116 asylum seekers have been relocated as part of this program. And still, refugees and migrants continue to flood in Europe. Last month alone, more than 218,000 people arrived in Greece. Kevin Ozebek, Brussels.
After a lengthy process, the U.S. State Department has given the green light for the sale of drone armaments to the Italian military. Italy has been asking the U.S. for weaponry to arm its 2 MQ-9 Reaper drones since 2012. Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
The $130 million sale includes over 100 Hellfire 2 missiles and 20 laser-guided bombs, among other munitions, according to a Reuters report. Italy is only the second country the United States has sold drone weaponry to after Britain. An unidentified Pentagon official said Italy qualified for the export deal because the American government sees it as a trusted partner and ally. While Congress can block the sale, it's thought unlikely down to the strict vetting process that has already taken place. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
For more of the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story or check out our website at featurestorynews.com. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
NeonNettle.com, a new voice in alternative media. For unfiltered news at your fingertips, visit NeonNettle.com, the UK's number one alternative news site. In association with The Richie Allen Show, NeonNettle.com.
Hello there. Welcome back to the program. It is nearly 4 minutes past the hour. You are with the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Thanks for choosing the program. Do check out our website. It's richieallen.co.uk on their YouTube videos. And of course, all the links to the podcasts, each and every program. Well, I've got all the programs, but the podcasts have been stored and are there to be downloaded at any time. They've been available now for about 4 or 5 months, I suppose, maybe a bit less. So go to richieallen.co.uk, listen to previous episodes there. To listen to interviews on their own, just the interviews, go to youtube.com and look for The Richie Allen Show. All of them are there. Big thanks to Simon Stewart for that, of course. Now, coming up in a few minutes, terrific journalist and author Christopher Bolin will join me from Sweden. His own story is a remarkable story. What happened to him when he started looking into the events of September the 11th and asking questions about that, along with people like Stephen Jones and others. He wrote a book, or a series of books, of course, entitled The Deception That Changed the World. He's Christopher Bolin. He's going to be joining us from Sweden in a couple of minutes' time. One or two more tweets coming in. Also an interesting email from Ian. Ian says, Richie, I want to give you something to put this flat earth nonsense to bed once and for all. And he sent me a link to a video, which I will certainly look at the end of the programme. Thank you very much for your email, Ian. I really appreciate with that. I really appreciate that. But on the flip side of that, I had an email or a tweet even from another Ian, didn't I? I think it was Ian Tinsley, was it? And it was something to the effect, Richie, what evidence do you have that makes you think the Earth is a spinning globe then? Asks Ian. Ian, I could be here all night, you know. What I believe is the Earth is round. That's what I believe. And to some listening to the programme, that would be evidence now that I'm some sort of shill or some sort of gatekeeper. Because there's so much nonsense in the independent media, and there's so much vitriol amongst those who watch and listen to the independent media, that when anybody disagrees with them, well, they must be a shill, or they must be a gatekeeper, or they must be whatever. I'm not saying you'll be saying that, Ian, but some will. I just think it's preposterous, and I've seen no evidence, as I said, to give me the belief or the impression that the Earth is flat. When I do, I'll be the first to say it. To me, it's ludicrous. And to me, if I'm going to be absolutely honest about it, I think it discredits and demeans and humiliates the movement to find the truth about what's going on in this world. Who's pulling the strings, what they're doing, what their plans are for us. When this sort of stuff is spoken about, I just think it's laughable. Personally, does that mean I'm right? How the hell do I know? Ultimately, what do we know to be absolutely 100% true? But I think it's unlikely. And like I said, I think there are people who have a job to infiltrate the independent media and to put ludicrous things out there, to muddy the waters, basically, and to make some of us look like idiots. And that is my opinion. That's all it is. You can take it or leave it. Simple as that. Val Corey was on to say on Twitter, every time I get drunk, the Earth shows me how it spins. Yeah, a bit of Irish there, I reckon. A bit of Irish in there. Right. Disinformation trolls are everywhere, says Mike. Yeah, I don't think... I mean, some of the people I know well on social media and whom I get on with are proponents of the flat Earth idea or theory. So I don't think they're trolls because they believe that. It's just that I don't believe them. I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say they're trolls because... I don't agree with them, and at the same time decry those who would call me a troll because I don't believe in the flat earth theory. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. The people I see on Twitter saying about flat earth don't look like agents of the system to me, but others do. When I see these articles online, these great detailed articles and these sexy looking websites, I think there's something else going on there. Like I said, it's simply my opinion. It's 8 minutes past the hour into the second hour. I can't wait for you to hear Christopher Bolin. Now, as usual, when talking with Christopher, tweet me at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk, and I'll put your points of view and your questions to Christopher. So, taking us there, this is Steve Earle and Johnny Come Lately on The Richie Allen Show.
I'm an American boy, come a long way. I was born and bred in the USA. Listen up close, I got something to say. Boys, I'm buying this ram. Well, it took a little while, but we're in this fight. Ain't going home till we're done what's right.
Gonna drink Camden Town dry tonight if I had to spend my last pound. When I first got to London, it was pouring down rain. Met a little girl in a field canteen. Paint her name on the nose of my plane. Six more missions, I'm gone. Well, I asked if I could stay, and she said that I might. Then the warden came around and I shut out the lights. Death raining out of the London night. We made love till dawn. Well, we tried to kill a lady cause marching home. Chest full of medals and a G.I. loan. They were waiting at the station down in San Antonio.
Johnny Come Lately on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Steve Earle. Yeah. Love that. Covered by a million rubbish cover bands. You can't beat the original. Right. It's 11 minutes past the hour then. Remember, tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. I'm pretty excited about our next guest. It's his first appearance on this programme. I did tell him just before... or during that song, is that it's about time. He should have been asked to come on as a programme before. He's a terrific guy. You will have read him and his extensive research into what happened on September the 11th, which didn't just change everybody's lives around the world. It changed his life because as a result of his investigation into what happened on September the 11th and subsequently posting books about it, writing about it, talking about it, he was harassed to the point that he left the United States and moved to Europe. Like I said, he wrote a series of books based on his research, including, called Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World. Now, he writes about lots of things. He writes very succinctly and very thought-provoking articles. You can find them on Bollin, that's B-O-L-L-Y-N, Bollin.com. Of course, I'm going to tweet that out now. It's a pleasure to welcome to the programme Christopher Bollin. Chris, you're very welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Richie. It's good to be with you.
Listen, the pleasure is really all ours, and massive interest on our social media pages today about you coming on, particularly late this afternoon, Chris, with the news that the British government has declared, amazingly, well, maybe not so amazingly, has declared that they have intelligence that leads them to believe that the Metrojet Russian plane that came down over Sinai was in fact brought down by an explosive device. Incredible this. You've been writing about this on Bollin.com. What have you made of the announcement by the British government? And as we speak, David Cameron is chairing a meeting in London with their sleeves all rolled up, Chris, about what the bloody hell do we do about this. What have you made of this today?
Yeah, that's a very new story that the U.S. and British are saying that a bomb was put on the plane, apparently in Sharm el-Sheikh, and that is what caused the plane to come down over the Sinai. That is apparently what the story that they want us to take away from this disaster. and they want us to think that ISIS or ISIL or some affiliate thereof brought down the Russian plane as a response to the Russian intervention in Syria.
Now, can we just start off with the idea that somebody went to the airport and managed to smuggle a bomb on that plane? We're led to believe, Christopher, we're led to believe, you and I, when we go to an airport, no matter where it is in the world, that airport security is uniformed around the world. Since September the 11th, it's changed beyond anything that we ever knew before. It's virtually impossible now to get an explosive device through the many, security checks you have to get through. How could they have done it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's very unlikely, actually. This claim that the U.S., the CNN, and the British are saying that a bomb, they have no evidence to back up that claim. They're saying that they have a feeling that it was a bomb. And my article, Suspicions About the Russian Plane Crash, talk about the from the very beginning, I followed this. And the evidence indicates that it was not a bomb, that it's very likely that this plane was actually remotely hijacked and then forced to go into a very steep climb and that it stalled and then it crashed to the ground. Very similar to what happened to the Air Asia plane that crashed in the Java Sea last December 28th.
Yeah. I tell you what, Christopher, delighted to read your articles over the last couple of days, particularly about the way that the media will report something before somebody has any opportunity to stop them, before the people who really control the media have a chance to tell them, don't say this. Sometimes stuff gets out. One of the things we learned on Sunday morning was, two very important things. One, the co-pilot told his wife the plane is not fit for purpose, number one. And number two, we learned that the pilot talked to ground control and said, the plane is not doing well, I need to land in Cairo. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but has that just been airbrushed out of the news the last few days?
Oh, that's very true. The first thing is that the BBC, for example, came out with a story the day before yesterday, I think it was, in which they presented four theories, only four theories, as to what they say could have brought down the plane. You know, technical fault, pilot error, a bomb on board, or a missile. Those were the only four things. Whereas I said, the indications are that the plane was remotely hijacked, and those indications are several. One is that the pilot communication was cut off. His last communication was at about 30,000 feet, and this was printed in the Telegraph from Britain. It said that the last official with Egyptian air traffic control told the local reporters that the pilot complained of malfunction in the wireless devices and had asked for emergency landing at the nearest airport. Now, it's interesting that that report was only printed in the Telegraph in Britain and in a lot of newspapers, English-speaking newspapers in India and Asia, because it was one of the very first reports. That was never printed in any American newspaper, for example. Now, you have to understand that the government of the Sisi government, the military dictatorship down there in Egypt, is very close to Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu, and of course very much dependent and close to the U.S. government. So we have an Egyptian government that is not necessarily looking for the truth, but is going along with the plan or the cover-up. Another thing is that
to be fair, Chris, he did say, didn't he, that any talk of a terrorist event is propaganda. He was pretty strong in his condemnation of that idea. Was Sisi?
Yes. But if they, we'll see how far. We'll see what they can produce to back up their claim that it was a bomb. I mean, it certainly may have been a bomb. I don't know what happened to the plane. But if it were a bomb, that doesn't explain some of the erratic climbs that the plane did in the last half minute of flight that was recorded before it started. You know, at about 27,000 feet, the data transmission from the transponder stopped. Now that's another problem, because at 28,000 feet, all data that was coming in from the transponder ceased to come in anymore. Now that means that either the plane was completely destroyed and the power system was no longer working at 28,000 feet, or that that transponder was remotely turned off, as, for example, we know happened to the planes in 9/11. The transponders were turned off. And at that point, there was no communication with the pilot ever since 31,000 feet. So those two things, plus the report that he was complaining about a problem in the wireless, is very important, because the fact that the BBC doesn't report this, doesn't talk about this, means that they are feigning ignorance of drone technology.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, the Israelis and Americans fly drones day in and day out using the very same technology that can be used to hijack a plane. Now, this is very serious because we all fly on planes all the time. And this is an Airbus 321. And Airbus has a very serious problem. And any plane that has a connection, a satellite connection to the internet, is vulnerable. Now, one of the things that really clued me in from the very beginning was that this plane went down in the Sinai Desert right next to the Israeli border. And on the other side of the Israeli border is the Gaza Strip right there, and an Israeli secret unit called their cyber warfare unit that's called Unit 8200. And 8200 is Israel's cyber warfare hacking department. It's the biggest department of the Israeli Defense Forces, and its goal, its whole mission is to hack into other computers using cyber warfare to attack and destroy foreign targets.
And disable them. Do you know, on that subject, I got to mention this. An old friend of this program's, and he comes on from time to time, is the very experienced naval aviator and commercial pilot Field McConnell. Now, I don't know what your own particular thoughts about Field are. I find Field very eccentric, but a very intelligent guy. But eccentric is fair to say, but he's a lovely guy. I've not spoken to Field yet, but he has spoken about something he blew the whistle on, and that is the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, which Field reckons in the past has been used to take planes out of the hands of pilots and cause them to crash. Now, this is very serious, and that might go some way to explaining why the communications were cut off in the cockpit, Chris, because then the pilot wouldn't be able to say, well, you won't believe what's happened, but the plane has been taken out of my control, or anything else, you know, if there was an explosion or whatever.
Precisely.
What do you think of that?
Precisely. This is the signature. So these are the things you look for when you talk about, you know, for example, the Malaysian Airlines 370 that disappeared apparently in Indian Ocean. The very same thing happened. The communications, the normal communication channels between the pilot and the ground were cut off, which is why the co-pilot on that plane was trying to use his cell phone as the plane went over Penang to make a cell phone call. Why was the co-pilot of Malaysian Airlines 370 trying to make a cell phone call from, you know, 30,000 feet? Because the communications had been cut. They knew that. And they were in a position where they were being hijacked and could do nothing about it.
Could do nothing about it. Chris, I've got to ask you this because this is really important. When they have the evil, maniacal scumbags who do these things, who waste the lives of 224 beautiful people who never did anything to anybody, why have they, because they have so much control, how did they get it so wrong with the media? Because they always trip themselves up by not control. We know they have control of the media, but how did they screw it up to the point that, you know, these tidbits of information that are so important came out on Sunday? How did they screw that up? That's a $64 million question.
Yeah, I don't think they screwed it up. I think that, like, for example, this report about the malfunction in the wireless devices, as I said, was only reported in the Telegraph and in Indian newspapers.
That's right, two papers, yeah.
It never made it. Oh, it was half a dozen or more than a dozen Indian papers, the Statesman, what have you, the Hindu. But it was not printed in any U.S. media, or it was not reported on CNN or anything like that. So that's control. Now, this Egyptian air traffic control official was speaking to local reporters. And so, you know, in the very beginning, when something like this happens, you will get honest to goodness reports that are close to the truth. But as soon as the spin gets going, the spin machine gets going, then you're going to see that you're going to get stories like the BBC where they give you four choices, none of which include the most likely culprit, which is remote hijacking.
I'm going to read some tweets. You can tweet at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Remember, follow Christopher on Ballin. That's B-O-L-L-Y-N. I'll do it properly, Chris. It's Bravo Oscar Lima Lima Yankee November. There you go. You see, I must have been in the military at one time. That's ballin.com. Terrific, well thought out, thought-provoking articles on there. So get on there. Stephen Lash, how you doing, Stephen, on Twitter, says, the CBS television show Madam Secretary is currently running a storyline where Air Force One was taken over remotely. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That is very interesting indeed. Joanne was on to say, if the plane was blown up by a bomb, then bits would be scattered like Lockerbie.
Right.
Now, this, of course, is because the overhead shots we saw, I mean, Lockerbie went on forever, didn't it?
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's just a serious point, that. And she's not the only one to make that point. Several others have made that point as well. Number of people talking about the about your comments on the proximity to Israel and Israel having the technology.
Yeah.
A lot of people sympathising with that point of view as well. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Let me just scroll down there as well. And Paul was on to say the ultimate question. Who benefits? Who benefits from this happening? I mean, we got to, obviously, we were kind of segueing into that anyway. In your opinion, Chris, who's got the most to gain from this?
Well, you know, we have to look at what's the background is, of course, Syria, the conflict in Syria. And we have the United States and Britain and all of the international, so-called international community, calling for, you know, President Assad to quit and to leave that position. And then the Russians come in, you know, at a point when the American efforts have been a complete disaster, and comes in on support of that President Assad. And so, you know, this is a game. I wrote about this story about Syria and the Russian intervention. And I said that we will have to look and see what happens with the people who are supporting the mercenary forces in Syria, because this is unlike chess. This is a game with no rules. And that was only, I wrote that about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And here we see the kind of thing that happens when you cross the Zionist beast. And they will do things like this. Like, you know, three planes last year went down. Three Malaysian planes went down. 370, 17, and the Air Asia plane, which was a Malaysian-owned airplane. Simply because the Malaysians had the audacity to have an international tribunal in which they found Israel guilty of genocide against the Palestinian people. That was in December or November 2013. The next year, three Malaysian planes drop out of the sky. But I wanted one point about that we didn't finish about that, the bomb theory, that if a bomb went off in the plane, that does not explain how the plane then climbed 5,000 feet. You know, the plane first went down a little bit, and then it went radically upwards at about 8,000 feet per minute. And that, of course, takes a lot of the speed out of the plane and puts it into a stall. But I mean, a bomb on the plane would not have done that. And if a bomb had gone off on the plane at 31,000 feet, it is, as you say, that the debris would have been spread all over the place, not in a small, you know, ellipse of about 3 miles by 2 miles.
That's right. There's plenty of questions and comments on September the 11th. And we will in a minute switch over to 9/11, because a lot of us learned about Chris, of course, through his writing and investigating of 9/11. So we will turn to 9/11 in a minute. A point made by Paul in an email he just sent to me now. Paul Ryan is listening to the program in Manchester, interestingly enough, which is where I am. Paul says, look, how are we supposed to believe that ISIS, who are on the run from Russia, who don't have that many in their ranks anyway, but they're now experts in getting bombs on planes? It's nonsense, says Paul. Simple as that.
Right.
I agree with that, to be honest. I have to agree with that. Not my job to be editorializing, but I have to believe that, because of what we know about ISIS, who funded them, who trained them, who armed them, that they're not in Egypt near the Israeli border, either A, shooting planes down, or B, getting bombs onto those planes. I can't believe it. I'll give you the last word on that, Chris, and then we'll move on to 9/11.
Well, the one thing in my article that I point out that's very important to understand is that these Airbus planes that have this wireless capacity, they have an antenna on top of them, a high-gain antenna, through which an external hacker, a hacker that could be an Israeli or an Egyptian, can hack into the plane, and it can get right into the aircraft navigation system and take over the plane. This is piracy in the sky without the knowledge of the passengers or, of course, the cockpit. They're unaware of this. And so we face – this is a very serious public health issue because we all fly planes, and Airbus has some very serious issues here. All airlines – Boeing has the same issue because if a plane has a connection to the internet, that connection can be hacked and the plane can be taken over by an external pirate. And that's a danger for all of us.
Certainly is. Final question on this, absolutely final question on it for the moment. Mm-hmm. We'll move on to 9/11. Colin, who's listening in Dublin, asks, Chris, remind us how we know that the plane ascended 5,000 feet after it exploded.
Right. Well, we have the data from the transponder that shows that, you know, it was going along at about 400 knots at about 30,000 feet. And then at a certain point, you know, it started to dive, and we see that the vertical feet per minute. This data is in my article. The chart is right there in the article. Suspicions about a Russian plane crash. I added this part today, and it shows these spikes of vertical climbs and vertical drops. And as you see, as the plane is going into, it was going up just like the Air Asia plane. It went into a climb at 8,000 feet per minute, and that means that it lost a lot of speed, and that's when it started. The speed just kept dropping, and when this transponder stopped sending its signal at 27,000 feet, the plane was only going 62 knots. Per hour.
62 knots, yeah. It was very slow. It was falling. It had to be falling.
It was falling. Now, if there had been a bomb on the plane at 30,000 feet, you would have, as I said, debris spread over a wide area, and the plane would not be doing these climbs. That was just the first climb. Then it fell, then it did a climb of 5,000 feet per minute, then it fell again, then it did another climb of 7,500 feet per minute. So it did three very serious climbs, all the time losing airspeed.
It's great to have Christopher Bolin on the program. Go to bolin.com and read more there. Lots of questions and comments about September the 11th, which, of course, Christopher investigated and wrote about extensively, and archived articles, of course, on his website as well, which are very interesting. Mike asks me to put this question to you, and it's an interesting one. Chris, I've been, obviously, like anybody else in the independent media, reading and writing and looking at and studying 9/11 for a long, long time. But here's a name now that doesn't come up so often anymore, and it's worth reminding people of: Marvin Bush. And Mike says, ask Chris to mention Marvin Bush and his involvement. He's kind of been forgotten about as Marvin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Marvin for a minute.
Yeah, I think Marvin Bush is a relative of George Bush, and if I remember correctly, he was part of Stratosec, or a company that had some contract with the World Trade Center
security,
providing security.
That's right.
That's probably true, and the Bush family is, of course, completely tied into this catastrophe. I mean, the most obvious crime is that President George Bush did not call for a blue ribbon investigation to investigate what happened to the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on day one. They dallied and prevented that from happening. And for the first 2 years, there was no investigation, basically. And in fact, what people have to understand is that there was never a criminal investigation of 9/11. You know, 3,000 people were killed in Manhattan at the World Trade Center, and no criminal investigation. Rather than having a proper criminal investigation, the FBI, under the control of a man named Michael Chertoff, who was the assistant attorney general, basically facilitated the destruction of the evidence so that there would not be an analysis of the steel or of the airplane parts.
Shipping it out, Chris. That's what they did. Right. They got rid of it, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they were shipping it out to Asia. The steel at a time when scrap steel was the lowest it had been in price for 50 years. So they were not making business. They were not making money on this. They were simply destroying the evidence as far away from America as they could get it.
Which is one of the gravest crimes that anybody in law enforcement can commit, destroying the evidence at a crime scene.
Right.
Isn't it? When you think about it, Chris, it's heinous.
Absolutely, and this is a mass murder. This is the crime of the century. And so, what I tell Americans and people when I talk about this in my presentations, for example, is a lot of my research in my Solving 9/11 book focuses on the cover-up of the crime and then the people who were behind the promotion of the deception, the lie, the false narrative. But the people who are involved in the cover-up, we know who they are. We know who their names, we know their positions, we know their titles, we know where they live. These people should be prosecuted, because if you're involved in a cover-up of a crime like that, you are a party to the crime.
Well, you're an accessory after the fact. It's as simple as that. Yep. You're duty and honor bound to divulge any information that you have heard or that you know to be true about a crime. Just a quick email from Mark about the Russian plane. Could the jet crashing be the US putting pressure on Putin to change his tune on no regime change in Syria? I noticed the bizarre out of the blue statement by the Russian foreign minister about consulting with all opposition voices in Syria, which was interpreted by the Western media as a softening of the Russian stance on keeping Assad in power. I think they were twisting the words of the foreign minister in Russia, who was kind of, I think, being sarcastic. I think the Russian foreign minister was kind of sarcastically saying, we're going to let the Syrian people decide on the future of Syria, which I think was a thinly veiled barb at America. But you might be right, Mark. It might have had something to do with that. But I want to stick with 9/11 for the minute, because this is fascinating. Chris, you know better than anybody that what happened on September the 11th, within journalism, within real journalism and real journalists, and of course, the only real journalism in the world is independent journalism, as you well know, it's driven a wedge amongst people, and people have fallen out badly and spectacularly, and sometimes in displays of anger and vitriol, the likes of which I've never seen within the media. And to me, it all boils down to arguments over whether, you know, the architects and the great work the architects for 9/11 Truth do, Richard Gage and the guys, whether they're right that explosives were used, or whether the planes didn't exist, if they were some sort of holographic images or whatever. Where are you, Chris? Where are you today? I mean, I know where you've been in the past, but you strike me as an open-minded guy who will always evaluate what you believe and change your opinion if you ever see any contradicting or contravening evidence. Were there planes, Chris? Were there actual planes? Now, I really don't know. I'm not setting you up for anything. I don't know. Were there planes, or was it something else?
Oh, yes, I certainly believe there were planes. There were planes in the World Trade Center, and there was a plane involved at the Pentagon, although a plane did not go into the Pentagon at that low level where we saw, because there was simply no plane debris to be found. And the wall was completely standing. There's no way that a plane can fly across the lawn of the Pentagon and penetrate the building without leaving a hole or without leaving debris outside. And at the World Trade Center, yes, I believe there were definitely planes. You see, you have to understand that there's a lot of people who are trying to muddy the waters and to make issues and to make contrary theories come forward, because the just to cause, you know, dissent among the group and to divide the group, basically a divide and conquer type thing, you know, weaken the whole movement by getting people to argue and bicker among themselves.
No, I don't doubt that. Can I just interject there? I don't doubt that. Now, I know that veterans today have been unkind about you previously in articles as they've written, and I can't speak for anybody who writes for veterans today, but I have spoken over the years with Jim Fetzer. Now, I'll tell you where I am. I said I don't know, which I don't know, but I'm inclined to agree with you. I'm inclined to believe that something hit the buildings and that they were most likely some sort of plane. So I'm kind of with you on that. Now, I know that Jim, I suppose, is most synonymous, along with people like Judy Wood and others, of this no plane theory. Now, while I totally agree with you, because I see it all the time, you know, people acting like journalists, saying things that are deliberately designed to look crazy to take away from, you know, the good journalism being done. I can, speaking for Jim Fetzer, you might not like Jim, you might have problems with Jim. With Jim, I think Jim believes that. I think he believes it passionately. Others, I don't know, but I'm inclined to agree with you that there are agent provocateurs, whatever you want to call them, that are out there to try and make people like you look stupid. No doubt.
Right. But what I do is I work from the evidence. You know, when we talk about the plane striking the second tower, for example, we have good images, and it appears that the plane actually was had a missile pod underneath the fuselage. In fact, both planes did, and that they fired some sort of incendiary missile into the building, which struck just a millisecond before the plane actually struck the building, and with the building South Tower with the plane 175, when you look at that video, you actually see a missile device coming out the other side of the building, a glowing white hot object flying out, leaving behind a trail of dark oxides, and another piece that's you know, leaving a gray smoke, burning quite different objects burning here, but they're coming out of that building with a great deal of momentum. You know, if these were holograms or something like that, how did they shoot these devices out the building? You know, I mean, did they have a catapult in there? No. There were planes, and these planes had missiles on them. And you know, another thing is that, you know, the discovery of nanothermite, super thermite, in the dust of the World Trade Center. When that discovery was really made in 2009 and published, the following year, Judy Wood came out with this book about direct energy weapons being involved. Now, the problem with her book is that she says in the beginning and the end and throughout the book that the destruction of the World Trade Center was a cold event. Well, I mean, the evidence indicates that it was anything but a cold event. In fact, it was a very, very hot event, which is why so many people jumped to their deaths, because, you know, the South Tower, before it fell, for about 7 minutes, molten iron was falling from the 81st
floor. That's right. Not to mention, weeks later, there was still this molten steel, which was still very hot.
They were very hot events. There were nothing cold about them. So right there, her thesis rests on this idea that the premise that this was a cold event. Well, there was nothing cold about it. So
now I'll tell you why I like Judy's idea. Now, I find Judy very strange. I think Judy, God love her, is a bit of a diva, I think, because I've asked her to come on this program in the past, and she's gone all diva on me and said, I won't come on unless David Icke is present, and all this nonsense. So listen, I make, produce, write, and broadcast live radio programs that don't have anything to do with David. David's a very, very good friend who puts the program out for me, doing me and the listeners a huge favor. But David doesn't have anything to do with the editorial content of it, much as I wish he would sometimes, because he knows so much and he's got so much information. But I said, no, we're not doing that. You and I are going to talk. Oh, well, I'm going to give you a list of questions then. And then I said, Julie, look, forget about it. Because obviously I would, you know, I would contradict or question some of what you're saying. But I do like you. And I'll tell you what, I do like her. I'll tell you what, Chris, I wouldn't, it wouldn't be beyond the lunatics, those hidden factors that, you know, that we don't see that are really pulling the strings. You know, that they have come up with direct energy weapons. But the problem, but whether proven this, but I will say this, and I've come around to now saying what I was going to say. Where I kind of like Judy's direct energy theory is, those buildings disintegrated, Chris. They completely disintegrated. They turned to dust almost instantaneously. Now, I've never seen a collapse ever. You know, we see them all the time when casinos are brought down, all these big buildings. I've never seen that happen before. There's usually a big pile of concrete and rubble. Where did that concrete go? That's that's the only issue I have. I'm inclined to agree with you, but I'm still thinking, we've never seen a collapse like that before.
No, that's true. We have never seen a collapse like that before. And the pulverization of the concrete is, of course, hard to explain. But you have to understand that this nanothermite, this is thermite that's made using nanotechnology, is an explosive of a completely another dimension than traditional explosives, and the energy yields are incredible. So these materials can be tailored to produce so much energy, so much heat, that you can pulverize concrete floors like we saw. I mean, the amount of energy was so incredible that for 3 months later, there were fires burning beneath the rubble pile, and when they got down to the bottom of the rubble pile, they found molten iron in the molten state.
Yeah, that's right.
This is like a month, 3 months to, you know, five weeks later, when they finally got down to the bedrock, they found this, and they found this molten iron in the basements, the sub basements of all three towers, 1, 2, and 7. And I mean, this is you know, one of the first indications that some very exotic explosives were used. And you know, the nanothermite, the superthermite that was used, is something that can only be produced in a military level laboratory, like in.
Now, we have tweets on this. Carl and Alan, to name two, understand nanothermite, they say, but they don't believe that it could dissolve thousands of tons even of concrete in 10 seconds on the scale that we saw. That's their opinion. Mm-hmm. Scott was on to say, we all know jet fuel doesn't burn at a high enough temperature to melt steel. Chris would agree with that, and Chris has written extensively about that over the years, no doubt about that. What about Building 7, asked Patrick Garrett. I mean, this is the ultimate red herring, isn't it, Chris? Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about trying to explain to people, I get asked sometimes to go and give talks. Now, not very often, because I don't do that. But because I've been interested in September 11 for a long time, people say, oh, Richie, will you come around, will you come down the country and come and speak about 9-11? I say, look, there are a lot more learned men and women you can get than me to talk about it. But I always say to people, when you are being criticized by your friends and called a conspiracy theorist, tell them two or three facts that are completely undisputed about September 11th. One, I always say, being that, as you quite eloquently described it, Chris, the worst mass murder terrorist attack on American soil in history, and $3 million was given to the head of the 9-11 commission. $3 bloody million. They spent $50 million investigating whether Clinton had oral sex or not. I always say that to people. I always say that my mind has gone blank now. The head of the commission, who wrote a book, who basically said that it was set up to fail. I always say, look at that. The guy who was given the job. Why is my mind gone blank now?
Philip Zelikow. Philip Zelikow was the head of the 9/11 commission. And
who was the lawyer? Thomas Keene. That's right, Keane. Thomas Keane. He wrote a book in 2006. He said it was a joke. He basically says this, and he could not get interviewed on commercial television or radio. Imagine the guy who was the lawyer for the commission, the guy looking over the whole thing, writes a book and says it's a load of nonsense. That's right, can't get on television. And I always say to people, this absolute empirical evidence that the whole thing was nonsense. It was all a setup.
Right, as you say, that there was in fact no criminal investigation of the evidence to start with, and these engineering reports that were done were written by engineers who were only allowed to go and do a walkabout for a couple hours, once or maybe twice, at the Pentagon and at the World Trade Center. All of the evidence was basically destroyed. Some of it was seen, and one Jonathan Barnett, who was part of the investigation of the World Trade Center, he found steel beams that were vaporized. And that, you know, there had been – it had gotten so thin to paper thinness, and then sections of the beams were just completely vaporized.
What about mini nukes, Chris? Do mini nukes exist? Can you have a nuclear event that you can control over a small space, over a small area? Is that possible?
That's a very good question. I worked with a man named Marion Falk at Lawrence Livermore Lab. He helped me with my depleted uranium research, and I asked him about that, about the idea that mini nukes could be used. And this man actually worked on the Manhattan Project, and with, you know, he's been part of the nuclear bomb, you know, production in the United States since the Manhattan Project. And he said no. He said that the idea of a nuke is that it's a growing thing. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And he did not think that the micro nuke theory was valid. And for example, I asked him, for example, to look at that piece of white hot burning substance that came out of the World Trade Center. As I said, when the plane hit it, it came out the other side, and it was leaving behind a gap and then some black oxides. And I said, you know, does that look like a burning uranium warhead? And he said, yes, that has the characteristics of a burning uranium warhead.
Wow.
And I asked him that because he was a person who I spent a lot of time with learning about depleted uranium in the context of the Gulf War and whatnot.
Funny you say that, Chris. Sorry again to interrupt you now. I don't normally do that, but we're running out of time. And as you're speaking, listeners are reacting in their droves. And they really are on Twitter. You've only got to go to our Twitter page and just put in Richie Allen Show and see it there. Number of people saying that New Yorkers have been more sick and have been suffering symptoms, sometimes like radiation symptoms, since 2001.
Yes.
Is there evidence of that?
Yes. About 1,700 first responders and firefighters and policemen
are dead.
Who worked at the – yes, are dead. Jeez. And this is because, as I said, this incredibly hot fire that was burning, these chemical reactions that were burning beneath the World Trade Center were producing a smoke that was abundant in nanoparticles, extremely small particles. And this is exactly like my research in depleted uranium. When you inhale these extremely small particles, these ultrafine particles, they are so small – that they will penetrate into the cells of your the nucleus of your cells, and that's where they wreak the most damage. That's where they really damage the human system, and they cause cancers and very exotic diseases that you never get. So young people who are 30, 40 years old have been dropping dead from these sicknesses that they got because they inhaled the smoke that was rising from the pile.
It's terrible that. James Kershaw on email. How you doing, James? Richie, if it was a bomb, it would have been planted by security services, but it wasn't a bomb, says James, in his opinion. Mm-hmm. Colin Houlden is listening on the Costa del Sol in sunny Spain. How you doing, Colin? Listening on richieallen.co.uk. One or two problems with one or two of the other players, depending. I understand the internet service providers in Spain, it's difficult. I lived there for 8.5 years. Internet speeds are slow. It's a problem. I know that. Don't forget the program is podcasted. It will be online in great quality in around about 35 minutes time. A couple of more questions about the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot system. One or two people saying, for all we know, that could have been used on 9/11. It might have been, you know, around then, and it might well have been used on 9/11.
Of course. As I point out in this article that I wrote about this Russian plane, there was, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Arnon Milchan, his Israeli buddy. They made a film in the year 2000 in Vancouver, Canada, about it's called The Lone Gunman, in which exactly that scenario happens. The pilot's flying a plane to New York City, and he finds out at the last minute that the remote pilot has been hijacked by an external hijacker, and the plane is being flown into the World Trade Center. And this television program aired on Fox TV in March of 2001. This is Arnon Milchan, Mr. Mossad in Hollywood. His first movie he made was a British-French production called The Medusa Touch with Richard Burton.
Oh, I remember that. You're showing your age there now, Chris.
Yeah, in which a plane flies right into the Pan Am building. So this idea of flying planes into building and remote controlling planes, you know, one of the head guys of the Mossad said earlier this year, he said, his name is Carmi Gilon, he said, a terror organization could take over a jet plane and achieve something like 9/11 without fielding any flesh and blood attackers. And he's the head of Shin Bet, and it's in an article about cyber warfare, because this is what they can do, and they've been doing it for a long time. You can hijack a plane, and you can crash it. You can put it into a really fast climb, which makes it stall, loses all its speed, and falls into the ocean. That's what they did with Air Asia. That's what they did Air Asia back December 28th last year. And that's what they did with this plane, I think, in Russia, in the Sinai, the Russian plane in the Sinai.
Chris, that just about brings us to the end of this. Thanks for coming on. It's about time that you came on the program. It really
Thank
is.
Thank you.
It was lovely chatting with you. Thanks for your insight. Thanks to everybody who's tweeted in as well. Follow Chris, if you haven't done already, on ballin.com. That's ballyn.com. There is a lot of archived articles on there you'll find really interesting. And as I said, thought-provoking. Read everybody and then make your own mind up. I think that's fair enough. Chris, come back on again real soon and stay in touch with us. And anytime you've got anything to put out there, anything that's vitally important that you've gleaned from your research, do feel free to come back on the program.
Well, thank you, Richie. It's been a pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Chris. The terrific Christopher Ballin on the line to us there from his home. I probably shouldn't say, should I? I can say Sweden. Chris is in Sweden. It's 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Lots and lots and lots and lots of comments on this particular subject. We haven't really touched on 9/11 for quite a while, really. The audio boys on Twitter. Leslie Roberts, the chief engineer of the World Trade Center, factored structural impact of large passenger aircraft into the design of the towers from day one. That's an absolutely spot on comment, and that's right. There was a smaller aircraft crashed into the Empire State Building When was it? It was in the 30s, was it, or the 40s? And they were taking great pains from there on in, when basically when building these massive structures, that they would be, you know, immune to being hit by planes who were lost in the fog or had gotten into difficulties or whatever. So that's a very good point as well. A couple of emails just come in. Mark Wells, how you doing, Mark? Richie, Freeman Fly of FreemanTV.com became famous for predicting 9/11 because he was tracking satanic symbolism. It was a massive satanic ritual. Mark Passio also unpacks the symbolism. Thank you, Mark Wells, for that. I really appreciate that. Sean sent me a link to evidence of Boeing uninterruptible autopilot. Thanks, Sean. I got that, and I will have a look at it later on. I think the same article, I think Field sent it to me, but thank you for sending it to me anyway. In answer to your questions about Field McConnell, he will be back on the programme again real soon. I have a lot of time for Field. When I said he was eccentric earlier on, that was in no way to criticise or demean the man. I love eccentric people. I really do. Some of the brightest people in the world are eccentric, and he's no exception to that rule. Let's see. Look, there's a lot of tweets on there. Steve was on to say, I might have mentioned this already, forgive me if I haven't. The late Donna Summer, a great singer, said in interviews that she believed her lung cancer was caused by dust from the World Trade Center. That's true. Again, that is true. Oh, well, it doesn't mean she's right. No, it doesn't. But the fact is, she suspected it. And if 1,700 first responders have died since then, it's not good, that, is it? It's not right, is it? Right, I'm going to take a wee break and then I'll be back to wrap it up. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
NeonNettle.com, a new voice in alternative media. For unfiltered news at your fingertips, visit NeonNettle.com. The UK's number one alternative news site. In association with the Richie Allen Show. NeonNettle.com.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Folks, this program exists because of you. It is your program. I'm saying that because I'm talking to Aaron Calland on Skype, who looks after the Richie Allen website and does a lot more besides as well, and doesn't ask for and doesn't get anything in return for it. And Simon Stewart looks after the YouTube channel. They do it for the same reason I do it, because we think it's important. We're not important. I'm certainly not important. I'm not fishing for compliments here. I'm sick to death of independent media presenters talking about what they're doing and what they're doing for humanity. I'm doing nothing for humanity at all. I'm talking to you. Because together, we can get this sort of information to people who might not ordinarily get it. That's all I do. I do nothing else and deserve no credit. But the programme will continue with your assistance. So please go to richieallen.co.uk, and on there is a link to how you can make a contribution to the programme. If you can't do that because you don't have the means to do it, you can be equally as helpful to me by looking out for the programme and by spreading the word about it. And don't just pay lip service to that. Genuinely do it. Share it around Facebook and Twitter as well. If I didn't read your tweet out tonight, I humbly apologise. I wasn't censoring anybody. Just lots and lots of tweets came in. Amongst the guests tomorrow night will be the wonderful Andy Worthington. He's a man who's in touch with Shakir Armour and Shakir's family. We want to find out how Shakir Armour is doing tomorrow. We'll get the real story from Andy Worthington, and another guest to be confirmed as well. That's it for the programme. It was a really enjoyable one for me anyway. Michael Murphy's a top man. What a great guy Michael Murphy is. And it was lovely to finally chat to Christopher Bolin. Both of those guys will be back again in the new year, I have no doubt. I'm going to leave you and love you. Leave you and love you, dear listener. I've got one cold beer in the fridge and I'm going to drink it. There you are. I'm going to leave you with Duran Duran. Thanks for listening. Bye for now. See you tomorrow.